Voices of Our World. I'm your host, Eileen Bott. Although no blood has been spilled, the battle over access to pristine forests rages right here at home. We'll discuss the Bush administration's relaxation of environmental protections, such as the Roadless Rule Act, with Eric Zimmerman, the policy analyst for the bipartisan watchdog group called Taxpayers for Common Sense. On January 5, 2001, President Clinton signed the Roadless Area Conservation Rule into law. The rule protected 58.5 million acres of wild forests in our national forest system from most forms of logging and road construction. According to the Greenpeace website, since his inauguration in 2000, President Bush has been quietly selling off our public lands to logging and mining interests. According to a paper published by Common Cause, the Bush administration received lots of campaign donations from the timber industry. Here are a few examples of how our forests have been compromised under the current administration. In December of 2001, the Forest Service issued new guidelines for roadless areas, which ended the once mandatory environmental impact studies of logging and road building on roadless areas. They also ended the requirement for public participation in project planning. Late on December 23, 2003, in a Holiday Eve announcement, the Bush administration made its decision to exempt the Songus National Forest in Alaska from roadless rural protections. The decision paved the way for 50 logging and road building projects in pristine forest. These projects threaten the existence of eagles, bears, wolves, and other wildlife that have almost disappeared elsewhere in the country. In July 2004, President Bush proposed to replace the Clinton plan with a different rule that will protect roadless areas only if state governors petition the Forest Service. Environmentalists say that large roadless forests are needed for prime bird and wildlife habitat, clean drinking water, and opportunities for recreation and solitude. Others claim that timber jobs will boost local economies. Eric Zimmerman, the policy analyst for the bipartisan watchdog group called Taxpayers for Common Sense, says there are a few other issues to consider. Kathy Golden speaks to him over the phone.
A while back, the Bush administration filed an advance notice of proposed rulemaking. They want to essentially do away with the roadless area rule that came about through the Clinton administration. Can you talk to our listeners a little bit about what that means and why they're headed that way?
Well, you are correct. The comment period did end for this, and now they're going to make a final decision regarding whether or not to overturn the roadless rule. And certainly the greatest motivator behind doing so is that up until this point, the approximately 58.5 million acres of areas considered roadless and protected under the previous rule are off-limits to road building and therefore largely off-limits to any timber activities as well. Certainly this administration has not been shy about helping out its friends in extractive industry, and timber is certainly no exception.
So listeners out there, they hear that we have 58 million acres of roadless forest. Most people would say, well, that sounds like more than enough. Why don't we log some of it and put some roads in there and undo the Roadless Act?
That's obviously a much smaller number than has existed, you know, 100 years ago. So the amount of acreage left is fairly small. From our perspective at Taxpayers for Common Sense, we believe that we shouldn't open up these acres for the very simple reason that doing so then encourages and probably guarantees more subsidies going to timber industries to do things like build roads and then remove the timber from the forest, which they are essentially paid to do by taxpayers.
There's a lot of downsides to that, aren't there, Eric?
There sure are. I mean, we're talking no small sums of money, and the yearly subsidy going to some of these activities is significant. The timber program, which includes the road building and the removal of timber, costs taxpayers somewhere in the vicinity of $300 to $400 million each year. And then that doesn't include what we spend also to maintain the roads that are in the forest. And then building all these roads and not taking care of them has resulted in a $10 billion backlog for road repairs that taxpayers are responsible for in the end as well.
The administration would like to point out that it's good for corporate interests, it's good for business, it's good for the economy. Is that a way to look at this?
Well, that's certainly the way that the administration will justify it from a taxpayer point of view. Those are pretty sketchy arguments, really, when you think about the amount of timber that is removed off of federal land. It's really a fairly small amount. It's only 2% of our timber comes from federal lands these days. Most companies have seen the writing on the wall and realized that they're better off getting their timber off of state lands or off of private lands. So there's an argument that can be made there, but when you look at the overall costs, it certainly seems to outweigh any benefit that may occur from allowing timbering in those lands. And I think what's also important to point out is that the reason that these areas have stayed roadless, or one of the reasons, is in part because of a preservation ethic, but also in large part because these are areas that are very steep, and much of them are terrain that road building and timbering is difficult. So if we are going to go in and do any logging, then you can only assume that it's going to be more expensive to get those logs out of there, and therefore it should be more of a subsidy to go in and do that.
What are the things that people need to look at? The Bush administration will always point to forest fire control as one of their answers to our concerns.
And that's certainly true, and it's, I think, another way to change the rhetoric and to utilize what's going on perhaps in the news at the time. Of course, when the so-called Healthy Forest Initiative went through, which was really designed to thin the trees in the forest so as to reduce the effect of forest fire. This was, of course, in the aftermath of a very bad fire year, and therefore they used that to pass a bill in order to justify removing timber just under a different name. It's no different process. It's still removing trees from the forest, and potentially with little positive impact. There's evidence that letting fires burn is great ecologically, and therefore in the long run is actually the better option anyway. Certainly cheaper. Fighting forest fires is no small expense. And if in the long run it reduces the number of catastrophic fires, then of course that's a benefit as well.
Can whatever the federal government aims to do here, can it be overturned on a local level by states?
The way the new rule is going to work is actually quite interesting. There's going to be an 18-month moratorium once the rule is finalized. During that time, governors will have the option to petition the federal government, either to increase protection of the roadless areas or potentially to actually decrease protection in those areas. And that protection is actually now, again, relative to the individual forest plans that have been passed for each of the national forests. So whatever the forest plan says is now how the forests are going to be managed. So any petition would be relative to the protection under those plans. As it stands now, the new rule, once implemented, will open up about 59% of the 58.5 million acres that are currently roadless. So about, give or take, about 60% will be available for road building immediately unless there's a petition that increases or decreases that number. And so there is certainly a local angle now that will take place. To some extent, we'll focus on the local level of working with governors and trying to explain to governors that, from our perspective at least, that for federal taxpayers, it's better to maintain these protections on the roadless areas. So that's the biggest pitch that we can make. And, of course, then we gain some leverage by working with other organizations, other taxpayer organizations, state taxpayer organizations, other conservation organizations that feel the same way that we do. And together we can make a pitch, I think, that certainly goes beyond just the taxpayer message but also gets into some of the other things that people find important about protecting their national forests.
We fought down in our local community. We fought down one proposed strip mall based on the findings of the Army Corps of Engineers with regard to clean water.
Mm-hmm.
It worked in our case. Obviously, it doesn't work in all cases.
Well, sure, and of course, that all depends on the strength of whichever argument that you have to put forward. I think given what's going on in Washington with deficits and mounting debts and debt ceilings being increased, our message has been one that's resonated very loudly with folks that are realizing that the way that we're spending money right now is completely unsustainable, and if we don't do something about it, we're going to be in some real budget problems. And when you look at something like subsidizing timber companies to build roads and take timber out of our forests, that seems like a logical place to start reducing the amount that the federal government is spending instead of increasing it.
As you attack this on a national level, is there any breakdown, red state versus blue state, when it comes to trying to beat back these policies?
No, I think that especially from the perspective that we come at these issues with, as I said at the beginning, we are nonpartisan, so we work with folks as best we can on both sides of the aisle, and this is certainly an issue that resonates on both sides. I think a good example of that is an amendment that we were able to pass in the House of Representatives to the Interior Bill, the Interior Appropriations Bill, and that was an amendment to eliminate funding for 1 year in one forest, the Tongass National Forest up in Alaska, and reduce or eliminate the funding for new road building there. And that was actually a bill that was championed by Representative Steve Chabot from the state of Ohio, who is certainly not somebody that you would necessarily confuse with an environmentalist, but does see the benefits for taxpayers. And again, that illustrates really the power of bringing together these issues in a way that empowers folks from all different political perspectives and from both parties to want to work together to reduce the ridiculous spending that also, in this case, harms the environment.
Do you then do any direct lobbying?
We do some direct lobbying, yes. That is something that we do. So we will work with individual lawmakers if it comes to that. At this point, this is really a state-based initiative that the president has put forth, and so the focus is more on the states, but certainly with the Tongass Amendment that I just mentioned and potentially in the future, if we could codify the roadless areas as roadless, then that would certainly be effective at protecting them as well. So that's something we would consider working with members of Congress to do that as well.
Any advice to our listeners who would want in any way to become involved?
Oh, certainly. A great source of information, of course, is always our website, which is www.taxpayer.net. In addition, starting to get in touch with governors and with local politicians that you think may be willing to listen to protecting these areas is going to be crucial. It's almost certain that this rule will be finalized, despite the 1.7 million comments that were submitted to the Forest Service encouraging them not to do this. It's almost certain it will happen. So anytime you want to start contacting local folks, it's not too early, that's for sure. I just think that it is important that people keep in mind that there can sometimes be a great marriage between issues of fiscal concern on Capitol Hill and other social issues such as the environment. And so sometimes the best way to get things done is to work with people on both sides of the aisle and try and appeal to the better sense of everybody that's working on an issue. And that's certainly what we try and do here. And we've found that we can do it to some effect, and that's really encouraging.
Thank you very much, Eric Zimmerman.
Take the seed that you have and plant it here. Give it water and time for a day or a year. Take the seed that you have and plant it here. Give it love, give it love.
Has your community fought for the preservation of wooded areas? Email us. Go to www.maryknoll.org/voices. Just click on Contact Us. Or you can call us at 1-877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 1-877-MARYKNOLL.
Well, that's all for this week, and thanks for listening. David Stang and Eric Zimmerman are just two of the voices of our world. This week's show was produced by Eleanor Ostrinsky, and I'm your host, Eileen Bott. To suggest a topic or for more information on today's guests, just go to our program's website, www.maryknoll.org/voices. To get Mary Knoll Magazine in English or Spanish, please call 1-877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 1-877-MARYKNOLL. If you missed a portion of this program, you can catch us on our website, www.maryknoll.org/voices. And please join us next time for more Voices of Our World.